All right, hello everyone. And looks like a light group tonight. I know some of them are at the fall retreat. I'm here in La Vida and I was at the fall retreat all day, but I took the evening off to come here and teach gentle healing. They're still over there retreating. It was the same for your class. For like, I also wonder if people got confused and thought this Tuesday was closed, right? So, yeah. But welcome. We are closed next Tuesday, not tonight, obviously, but we'll be closed next Tuesday. And what that means is you don't have 7 steps homework this week. Let me repeat that because 2 more people just popped in, Abigail and Andy. We will not have gentle healing next week. The sanctuary will be closed. So that means that you do not have any 7 steps homework for the next week. And you'll be able to see that because there's not going to be a gentle healing year 3 post on the daily update. The next time you'll have a gentle healing year 3 post on the daily update is a week from tomorrow. And that's when your homework will start again. And in fact, there may even be some days this week when there isn't even a daily update. And the reason for that is the daily update is automatically generated when there are new posts. And some days the only new posts are the homework for gentle healing. So on those days, there will not be a daily update. So if you notice no daily update, don't be concerned that something's gone wrong. Just this week is very, very light. And as a result, it just means there were no posts and so no daily update. So let's get into looking over this last week's homework. Before I get started, do any of y'all have anything that you would like to share? Abigail, you have a very colorful background there. It's beautiful. All right, then. I did collect some stuff, as I usually do. So why don't we jump into I should have been a little more prepared. I should have had my journal open because we'll be going there, I think. So let me get that open real quick. All right, that's open. So we're going to go to quote 829. I felt like I read the same quote twice this week. Did you guys have that feeling too? Or did I maybe do the same quote twice? Maybe I just did it twice. Because when I read it before, I thought it feels like I did this already. And I just had the same feeling too. Like, I feel like I did this one twice. So maybe I did. But here we go. Internal renunciation and external renunciation. It is the dispassionate man who is capable of these. The dispassionate man abandons fetters, internal and external, because of his yearning for liberation. And what I have in my note is to look at the RDA journal entries. So we will do that. Let me share my screen. First of all, this isn't one of them, but I want you guys to see this lion. This is, as you can tell, this is quote 1166. Quote 1166 says, liberation is peace. Liberation is extinction of all conditioning. Liberation is freedom from every kind of physical, psychological, and psychic distress. And to me, this picture of this lion kind of represented that quote. See how the wind is blowing his mane? I thought that was just kind of everything in the world happening. You know how stuff happens in your life. That's just everything happening. It's blowing his mane, but look how peaceful he is. You know, he's just resting right through it. So I thought that was a pretty nice symbol. But right now we're looking at 829. So let me go to step 4. You guys, by the way, are catching up to me. Notice I'm only in step 5. So pretty soon I'll be doing the quotes with you every day. Well, I do the quotes with you every day, but I'm trying to stay ahead. And because I do quotes with you, I don't always get to my own quotes. And as a result, you guys are catching up. So pretty soon I'll be finishing up my journal right alongside you guys. So 829A. All right. So this was about the internal renunciation and the external renunciation. First I wrote, there is a strong feeling that everything is imagination and madness, everything known that is. It is like being a chick inside a shell. Everything in here is nothing, and everything real is outside of the shell. The shell of imagination must be cracked open, but how? There can be no interest in imaginings, and there needs to be full interest in whatever is outside this shell. When my eyes are open, I need to be world and travel about and do all kinds of things. One might think that I am not in a shell because I can move here, go there, do this and that. But when I close my eyes and begin to look, I realize this perception of a me in a world is the shell. It begins to feel cramped, very, very cramped. And sometimes I feel a desperate energy to break free from this shell. I can watch this desperate energy grow. I have to know. I have to know. What is outside of the shell of me? And then this feeling arises that the one struggling to be free is also imagination. Imagination struggling in a dramatic feeling of desperation, wanting to be free of imagination. Something doesn't feel right. It is as if I am lost in a story, but trying to use the story to crawl out of the story. I notice there is a lot of passion in the desire to be free of the shell. There is also suffering in this passion, suffering in this struggle, suffering in this sense of being imprisoned in a sense of me. What sees all of this? What is watching this imaginary play of me trying to break free of me? What sees that it's all drama, the play of imagination? What is realizing all of this, and what is informing this real? There's something watching this drama of me trying to be free of me. There is something watching in a very quiet way. There is no passion in it. There is no desperation in it. It is watching without watching. It doesn't have an intention of watching. It is simply aware. It is being without being. It doesn't breathe or exist in a way that could be threatened. It is present without being present. It doesn't have an intention of being present. It doesn't focus attention and try to stay aware. It is subtle, and it cannot be gotten rid of. It is empty. It is everywhere because it is here. It cannot be said to be free. It is beyond the ideas of free and not free. It is the crack in the shell. It is what's outside the shell. It is inside the shell too. Empty, alive, aware, intentionless being. It is what I am. So the reason I wanted to share that is because one thing that happened to me when I was going through step four on my own, you know, all of these quotes that are attempting to help increase your desire for liberation, is that this sense of wanting it came in that was very, very strong, but as you could tell from that journal entry, felt very, very off to me. It was like a desperate, grasping energy that felt very much like the ego trying to be enlightened, the ego trying to get, and it didn't feel genuine to me. So what I did is I contemplated this quote, is as you can tell, I began to practice self-inquiry, and I shifted my attention to awareness, And I noticed that awareness was present and perfect and not grasping for anything. And so what I concluded was that I had somehow accidentally increased what I'm going to call the wrong desire for liberation. I don't know how else to say that. You know, like it just felt like it was coming from the wrong mind rather than the right mind. And it seemed like I needed to bring some relaxation and so just some present attention to awareness and gently stay with awareness rather than having this grasping, let me have it, let me have it, let me have it energy. Am I being clear? Anybody have anything they want to share about that? Yes, Susan.
Thank you for that. And as you read it, the thought, what you said about the imaginary play of trying to be free, the imaginary, I don't even remember the words you used. It was the feeling that was invoked in me. It seems very familiar to me, and so very helpful. I'm wondering, out of curiosity, just I'm backing off a little from that because it's still very raw and tender in me right now, what you just said about who is asking. Is it the ego asking? Is it more than that? I'm kind of wrapped up, and I'm definitely wrapped up in that myself, in the questions that have come up since step four began. But my inner question to you is, you speak of in 2016, you speak so definitively now of what you see yourself having gone through. Do you remember at that moment, is that still alive in you in that moment of that questioning?
Let me just rephrase the question, see if I'm understanding you. Are you asking me if that grasping is still in me?
Not the grasping, but the understanding, the comprehension of what grasping there was in you. You speak so clearly about knowing at the time, being able to make that subtle shift.
Yeah.
At the time because of what you were contemplating. And I have not experienced that yet. I can write and I can contemplate and I can really speak from where I am, but I can't step back from that sometimes. It's hard for me to go there.
All right.
Were you there as you contemplated it? Were you able to immediately step back from it and see it?
Yes. Well, in fact, let me just double check the dates on here, but that's the way I recall it. But let's see. I wrote 829C on June 27th. I wrote 829B on June 27th. And I wrote 829A on June 27th. So yes, that occurred all in one day, all in one session of setting and contemplating this quote. I learned to begin to shift into awareness through the I am that I am mantra that Inner Ramana teaches. And as you know, what we're asked to do with that mantra is to say, to bring our attention within, if possible, close the eyes, devotionally say, I am that I am, and then pause in the silence afterwards, right? And when I started doing that, I had no sense of awareness. Now, obviously, I was clearly aware. Everybody's aware. It's kind of like a joke to me now. But I had no sense of awareness. And after doing that mantra pretty faithfully for a couple of months, I got my first glimpse. And I remember back then, I was still closer to A Course in Miracles than I am now. And the way I described that experience of that shift into awareness, I didn't use those words. What I said was, I know what the something real is that can't be threatened, and it's me. You know, I knew for the first time, I knew what those words meant. I'd read them, of course, but I had never experienced it directly. But after that first glimpse, You know, it seems like there would be a long period of time before another quick glimpse, and then a long period of time before another quick glimpse. And then I learned to start playing games, which is kind of funny because I'm leading an awareness games retreat. But I started playing games, and I taught you guys some of these games in Gentle Healing Year 2. At the end of each week, I would introduce a game to you. And then, of course, this week, I introduced the Awareness Games book to you, which I just discovered. I didn't know that book. I was coming up with my own games. But the very first game I ever started playing was kind of like catching what is constant. And what I mean by that is, you know, like right now, I feel really healthy. And I would notice this awareness, notice what's constant while I'm healthy. But then if I got a cold, I would pay attention to what's the same. What's the same here when I have a cold as when I was healthy? Or if I'm, you know, like right now I'm not hungry, I just ate. But then when I would get hungry, you know, before running in to get something to eat, I would pause and I'd notice what's the same here that's exactly the same right now while I'm hungry as when I wasn't hungry. You know, I do that if sleepy. What's the same now that I'm sleepy as when I wasn't sleepy? And so I would play with how these changing experiences would happen, hot and cold, right? Wet in the shower and dry outside of the shower. I mean, you just name it. And I kept looking for what is constant. And that game that I would play started really bringing in this sense of awareness in a stronger way. It started bringing it more forward. And it wasn't until the game brought it more forward that I could even begin to practice awareness, watching awareness meditation. Because again, it sounds crazy to me now, but like everybody else, I wasn't real clear on what awareness was. I wasn't real clear on that sense, that feeling of being awareness instead of the feeling of being body-mind. Right? It has a different feeling. Another game that I used to play a lot is, you know, if you just kind of pick something straight ahead, you can pick my nose if you like, because I'm straight ahead of you. Just really look at my nose. Just don't have any judgments about it while you're doing it. No. Look at my nose. And then gradually keep looking at my nose. Don't stop looking at my nose. But then gradually start noticing your peripheral vision. And start to just be aware that you're aware of everything in your vision. You know, you're aware of my nose and you're aware of everything in your peripheral vision. And start noticing the sense of just being aware. You know, you could even ask what's aware. And I would just sit and just play these games. Oh, another game I used to love to play was, I couldn't play this until I started wearing glasses. But once I started wearing glasses, I used to notice the frame of my glasses as I look at someone, as I talk to someone. Because usually, you know, we get so used to the frame of our glasses, we don't even see it anymore. But at least my glasses, you know, maybe some people have too big, they can't see, but I can see the frame if I focus on it. So I would focus on the frame of my glasses and notice that I was looking out at a world through the frame of my glasses. And that gave me a real strong sense of being the observer as I did that. So just all these different little games started coming to my mind. And the funny thing is, a lot of these games came to my mind as I read that Rupert Spira book that I read in Gentle Healing Year 2, The Transparency of Things. And as a couple years went on, or a few years went on after I had quit reading the book and I kept playing the games, you know how memory is incorrect. I actually thought those games were in the book. And that's why I started reading that book in Gentle Healing. I wanted to teach you those games. And I was shocked when I started reading the book and the games weren't in there. My mind came up with the games on its own as I was reading the book. They weren't even written down in there. And I was shocked. I had no idea. So my mind just spontaneously was coming up with these games. And I was playing these games. And of course, was really excited to find this book by Brian Tom O'Connor, Awareness Games, which I introduced on Sunday And of course, we're working with at the retreat this week. Is this answering your question, Susan? It is. Okay, good. Yeah. So, and now, all I have to do to shift into the feeling of awareness is want to shift into the feeling of awareness. Just remember. It's that simple. You know, because it's like exercising a muscle, right? So I can still forget. I can still get caught up in something and forget. But as soon as I notice I've forgotten and I choose to remember, I have that sense of being awareness again. I don't have the same sense of being Regina that I used to have. I have a much stronger sense of being, well, two words really fit, three words fit, of being nothing, of being present, and of being invisible. And invisible is really strong for me because I know that I'm nothing, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I know that I'm nothing, and I can tell when I talk to people that they all have ideas about who I am, so to them I'm something, and that makes me feel especially invisible because I realize that, you know, they're looking at an image. They're looking at their Regina. Everybody has their own Regina, everybody that knows me, and they're looking at an image. And they can't see me at all. You know, they can't see the nothingness, the presence at all. And it kind of reminds me of Jesus at some point in the Bible. He was talking to the apostles and he said something to them like, you know, you see me as a body. And I'm sure he was having that same feeling, that same sense. You know, that they all had their idea about who Jesus was. And he didn't feel like that, Jesus. He wasn't that Jesus that they each had. He was just the presence. You know, he described it as being blown about by the wind, right? Not knowing where he would go. Yeah. Anything else you want to ask? Did I answer that fully? Yes, go ahead.
I think you answered that question more than fully. thank you. I think what you said at the end affirms probably the basis of my first question. What I wanted was confirmation from you of your experience of where I think that I am right now. Mm. And so your elaboration on that and your memories of where you were back in, what, 2016 or so, and your honesty about going about what really matters is very valid to where I am right now. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else has something they want to share or ask? Andy? Did I see your hand? Yeah, good.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say there's one thing that you said in your contemplation. It said, it is as if I am lost in a story, but trying to use the story to crawl out of the story.
Yeah.
So that was really just resonated. And I can see the struggle in there of an I, you know, struggling to crawl out of the story versus some of the things you talked about last week. We talked about... can't remember how exactly you put it, but it was more about life working through me versus me, or maybe it was something about desires. Is it me who desires X, or is it life desiring X working through me through that desire, you know? And so it just jumped out at me that I like that.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, well, when I was, you know, doing my work this week, and as you know, I review my journal, I thought that was pretty important to bring forward because I'm guessing I'm not the only one who has confused desperation with a genuine desire for awakening, you know, for a time. And I could, you know, I mean, desperation, at least for me, didn't feel right. Now, Michael Langford might disagree because he talks about being like a man who's held underwater, right? How much do you want air? How much do you want air? So, you know, maybe some of this is more, what's the word that Ramana Maharshi used to use? Well, I can't think of the word, but it's more your individual tendency, right? Your individual tendency. You know, so that sense of being held underwater that Michael Langford describes, that may have worked better for him. For me, it felt like I was caught in ego, going round and round in ego, and not becoming free. I started feeling freer when I started noticing the seeing that was watching the desperation. Right? Noticing that. And that's when I felt self free. When I was feeling desperate, I felt trapped. So, too bad Michael's not here. If he's listening on the radio, he can feel free to pop in. There aren't many people here anyway, and you could talk about the being held underwater and how that was helpful to you. So we'll see if he comes. Let's go on to 8:32. If you really have a desire for liberation, avoid the senses from a great distance as you would poison, and continually practice the nectar-like qualities of contentment, compassion, forbearance, honesty, calm, and restraint. So my first question for you guys is, what does this mean to you? Avoid the senses like poison. Anybody have anything to share on that? Yes, Tony. Whoops, you're still muted. There you go.
To me, it feels more like be aware of how the senses can draw you into this feeling that you are the person. The fact that the word poison was used initially, I think, had a strange kind of a, well, that sounds awfully negative, kind of a feeling. But it, to me, just reading it now, it really kind of like just reinforces the idea of how being drawn in through the senses of an identity can be very, very like toxic, or just being like a disillusion. And so I feel like I'm not resistant to the word poison now that I was when I first read it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Thank you. And I got to say that I got to exactly the same thing you did, because obviously we can't avoid the senses. I mean, you know, we have to see and hear and taste and smell, but yes, I think it's the being drawn out, right? It's being pulled all the way into the play or all the way into the movie instead of hanging back. You know, noticing awareness instead of hanging back, noticing the frame of your glasses and noticing that you're the observer. And yeah, I think that poison, it is kind of like poison. If you remember that what you are is the true self, what you are is awareness. A poison kills, right? Well, obviously the true self is never killed, but it kinda is when you get drawn into the person, when you're completely drawn to the person. In that moment, you don't know yourself as the true self, right? It's not your experience. So you could say it's like temporarily killed, right? Temporarily poisoned. It's been put aside or ignored or forgotten to that degree. So yeah. Anybody else want to share on that? Andy.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that one of the things about the senses is they provide proof, yes, that the world is real. So my eyes are telling me that there's a desk right here. And when I reach out and touch it, my fingers, my senses come back to me and say, look, this is all real. And so they're constantly, you know, part of the illusion. They form part of the illusion to verify and make you believe that it's all there and real. So the whole thing of avoiding the senses is they're feeding information back to the head, the brain, but don't necessarily always take their proof for being the truth.
Yeah, and without going into too much detail, I'll tell you there has been a small challenge at the fall retreat involving about three or four women. And what's interesting is when they each come and tell me the story, how the story is different from each perspective. I mean, I can tell it's the same story, like they're all talking about the same event, but they each have their own perception. They didn't hear the same thing. They didn't see the same thing. Right. And it's really interesting. I remember watching TV shows when I was a kid. There was some TV show where they'd show some event from different people's perspective and show how they didn't match up, some comedies. You know, maybe one of them was All in the Family or something. But, you know, we think what we see and what we hear is the truth. That's not even true in the illusion. I mean, like I said, all four of these ladies have a, you know, they heard something different. They saw something different. That the senses are so deceiving, and it's through the mind and through our perception and through our clouds. You can't trust any of it. You can't even trust what you think you heard or what you think you saw. The only thing that you can really trust is presence and intuition. You have to stay back, stay inward focused, even while you're talking outward and working outward. You have to stay inward focused all the time, which is what Inner Ramana tried to teach us, that surrender, right? And using the surrender and the mantra and self-inquiry, it's having an inward focused approach even with the world, because you can't trust even your own senses. And that wasn't even the metaphysical. I mean, metaphysically, you know, I heard Andy hit the table and it sounded very solid. His hand may have told us the table was there. Our ears heard you hitting it and told us the table was there. But scientifically, we know that's mostly empty space, right? So in that way, our senses are lying to us. It's amazing. So I guess they are kind of poison. One of the things in this particular quote, 832, it also mentions the nectar-like qualities that you want to continually practice. The first of the nectar-like qualities is contentment. And I went ahead and just looked up contentment in the dictionary, and I was impressed with the definition. It said a state of peaceful happiness, which I expected, but then it said not wishing for more. Not wishing for more. So think about that. You can't be content and want more or want something different than what is right now. I thought that's pretty amazing to me. I think that's an excellent definition. Do any of you all have anything to share on contentment? Yes, Tony.
This is not necessarily on contentment, but when I did go back and read your contemplation for 832, and I particularly enjoyed the fact that you went over each quality. And I was wondering if you would be willing to share that with us now.
Sure, I can do that. So let me share my screen and pull you guys down here. And where is my Sorry, one second. I know you can't see you guys, but you guys are kind of blocking what I need to do. All right, so we're talking about 832. So let me get to 832. There's 832 all the way to H. So this was about not being able to avoid the senses, which I think we already talked about. So we'll go past that. This is my vow of silence. We'll go past that. I still live by that vow of silence, by the way. The vow of silence was about looking inward and seeing if what I'm about to say needs to be said before I speak, not just talking, right? So here we go, the nectar-like qualities, contentment. My dictionary describes contentment as a state of peaceful happiness. It also says that one who is content is not wishing for more. I will contemplate these definitions while looking at myself to see when I am not fully content. I will bring lack of a contentment into awareness. Awareness is a state of peaceful happiness. Therefore, shifting to awareness resolves imagined lack of contentment. Seeking out lack of contentment is seeking out circumstances where the ego is still unconsciously believed. I am sure there is some habitual lack of contentment remaining. I am excited to see and resolve those unconscious habits. I will not rush through this contemplation. It deserves time and attention. Now, I can't see all of you all. So if anyone has something to say about contentment before I go on to the next nectar-like quality, go ahead and just start speaking. All right, I'll go on to the next quality. I think I clicked on that right, but it doesn't seem to be changing. This is contentment. There we go. It was just slow. Okay, the next one. Oh, this is a long one too. I remember this. The next one is compassion. My dictionary defines compassion as sympathetic pity and concern for the sufferings or misfortunes of others. My feeling is this. In order for compassion to be true compassion, one must also reflect on true sympathetic pity and concern for the suffering or misfortune of others. Jesus asked us to love our neighbors as ourselves. This implies a great concern for others. We cannot be coldly detached and disassociated from the suffering and misfortune of others and love them as ourselves too. And I'll tell you, we had a big discussion last night at the fall retreat. One of the things I did at the fall retreat was I showed two videos or two interviews of serial killers, where the serial killers were asked very frank questions, and they spoke very specifically about their love of killing, very graphic about their love of killing. And when the video was ended, I took them into an awareness game where you take a feeling that's negative, like let's say you were disgusted by something one of the men said, you would take that disgust and you notice it for a bit of time, you know, because we don't want to avoid it. You notice it, you notice awareness looking at it, but then you also notice the disgust isn't the only thing here. You start to notice, for example, that you can be aware of your breathing. Or you notice that maybe you hear traffic outside or someone in the next room. You allow the disgust to remain, but you notice there's sensations in the body. And it was a game called include, where basically you expand awareness, you know, expand your awareness. It gets bigger and bigger. And as you do, this feeling starts to seem less meaningful, the disgust, that was it. And it starts to disappear. But what was interesting is only about four people, and there's about 17 people here, only about four people had feelings to do the include exercise with. The others all said they didn't feel anything. And this was a very graphic discussion. So it was kind of interesting to me. I think we do become coldly detached and disassociated from the suffering and misfortune of others. I think that one reason people didn't feel anything is this wasn't personal. You know, this wasn't personal. It Nobody they knew was killed by the serial killer. The serial killer wasn't their brother or their father or their son. And I feel quite certain that if it had been closer, they would have felt something. So, and some of them had some very spiritual sentences to share as to why they didn't feel anything. Well, I know it's just ego. I know it's an illusion. I'm like, you know, I was quite interested in that. My experience of watching these gentlemen talk, and one of the gentlemen, in fact, he was, you know, he had killed between 50 and 70 people. He wasn't sure. He'd lost count. He said he actually quit counting after 26, I think. He killed a lot of people. Believe it or not, he was likable. He had I know it sounds disgusting, but, you know, he had a sense of humor. He was in touch with his feelings, and he was honest about his feelings. And there was something in him that you could like. So it was interesting for me as I watched my emotions watching his videos, because, you know, he also talked, and pardon me, I'm going to get a bit graphic with you for a moment, but he was talking about his love of killing. He talked about how when he strangled people, how he loved the bulging eyes. He talked about when he slit throats, how he loved watching the skin come apart, you know, and more, but I'll stop there. But see Don reacting? What I noticed when I was watching this man talk is I noticed a range of emotions moving through. A range of emotions, some of which we would describe as negative and some of which we would describe as positive. He said things that made me laugh too. And everybody else laughed. The whole crowd laughed. You know, he just, like I said, there was something likable about the guy. But there was a range of emotions. I wasn't at all detached. So when a large number of people told me they felt nothing, that didn't seem right to me. It seemed like we have learned how to use our spirituality to shut ourselves down, to become detached, not in the healthy way, but in a very unhealthy way, to desensitized. Yes, Don, you want to speak?
Isn't that what's called spiritual ghosting or metaphysical yes. ghosting?
Yes, yes, yes. So let me return to this now. It's interesting, we went through this last night. So again, Jesus asked us to love our neighbors as ourself. This implies a great concern for others. We cannot be coldly detached and disassociated from the suffering and misfortune of others and love them as ourselves too. Because are you coldly detached and dissociated from your own suffering or your children's suffering? Of course not, right? So then I ask myself, what is the best way to be with the suffering and misfortune of others? What is the best way to be with my own suffering and misfortune? To me, the two questions are the same. Therefore, the answer is the same. If the suffering is mine, I practice rest, accept, and trust. I rest from the stories of the mind. I rest in awareness, in presence, without believing the stories. I realize the stories are temporary spinning of mind. I remain still with faith in silent clarity as the stories come and go. I accept emotions that may be present. I accept outer circumstances as they are. I be with what is in quiet patience. I trust my choice to rest and accept while also trusting all things. I trust the universe as perfect benevolence without defining benevolence as a specific outcome. In addition, if there is enough sanity present, I practice self-inquiry, I watch awareness. Therefore, I pledge to show compassion by acknowledging the suffering of others as a genuinely felt experience that isn't to be denied. Resting my wrong-minded thinking, including righteous ideas of how to correct wrongs and fix the outer picture. Accept my own feelings without denial or artificial justification. Trusting the benevolence of the universe without having the need to understand. Watching awareness while remembering that the untouched awareness I am is also what others too. what others are too, being directly kind and helpful when it is my opportunity to do so, watching my thoughts and actions to see where my thinking contributes to outer reflections of suffering and misfortune, correcting myself by letting go of harmful thinking patterns, seeking ever more to discover truth and abandon untruth. This to me is true compassion. So, you know, when I look out in the world and see suffering, and actually, you know, La Vida is an amazing little place. La Vida, a lot of people do not lock their doors. Sometimes when people get out of their cars, run to the post office, they not only don't lock their car, they leave the keys in it and the car running while they go in. Crime is unheard of here. But a week and a half ago, there were two savage beatings in this town. I think probably started by road rage on the highway. One person, when coming into town, a guy passed him in a non-passing zone, then stopped in front of him right on the highway, so he had to stop. This guy got out and started running towards this other car. The other guy had a baseball bat, and he says he got the baseball bat to defend himself, and he got out. But the first guy somehow got the baseball bat from him, beat him in the head, left him laying in the highway bloody, and I guess drove on into town, and I guess was speeding really fast, and someone who had children outside yelled at him, "Hey, slow down." He jumped out of his car, and he also beat that man in the head. Both men are in the hospital, brain damage. One needs complete, you know, like the bones in his face are broken. He needs facial reconstruction. I can't not feel anything about that. You know, I can't not feel anything about that. But I can allow my feelings without having any judgments against anybody involved, against even the man who did this, without having any judgments, right? I can have peace. I'm going to say peace mentally, and allow the compassionate feelings in my heart at the same time. And be with that and be okay with that. And at this, you know, this, so I think a lot of people are afraid of feelings. Now, I didn't know either of these men that were beaten. But one of the men, a lot of people in town know. The other guy, I'm not sure if he was a La Vida guy. He was coming towards La Vida, but nobody's really talking about him. But the other guy, pretty much everybody knows. You know, and the whole town is hurting over that. This is a small town. Who would I be if that meant nothing to me and I just said some kind of metaphysical thing of, I don't know what I would say. I can't even make up the metaphysical story that would make me be coldly detached. But I'm not having judgments. I don't have a loss of peace. It feels like compassion to me. And it also re-emphasizes, you know, why we want to stay at peace. You know, I mean, what did this was anger and rage. Why would we want to allow ourselves to fall into those same energies? You know, it re-emphasizes all of that too, right? So that's what all these bullets are about, right? All of these bullets are about my responsibility, my compassionate responsibility if I genuinely love my neighbors. So I'll move on because we only have 4 minutes left. She asked me to go through all of them. We won't have much time. I'll have to go quick. My computer, for some reason, seems to be moving a little slow too. Here we go. Forbearance. My dictionary defines forbearance as patient self-control, restraint, and tolerance. To me, this speaks of coming from wisdom instead of from self-centered, limited perception, which is ignorance. It also indicates the loud and active shadows of self-centered ignorance may be present in me and in the outer picture. But even so, the focus is to remain below the surface of things with quiet, present wisdom, so that true perception is the chosen perception, and wisdom is listened to and followed in both thought and action, or in non-action if we're to do nothing. This is something I can do. I gratefully and generously commit to forbearance. So for me, to wrap that up in a nutshell, forbearance, this patient self-control, restraint, and tolerance, means never living from my ego, even if I see my ego show up. You know, so if I inside see my ego, let's say I was judging this man who, and I really felt no judgment. I feel sadness, but no judgment. Let's say I was judging. I'm sure a lot of people in town are judging. In fact, I've seen some pretty rude comments written down. So of course they're judging this man that severely injured their friend. Of course they are, right? So let's say I was doing the same thing, or I was seeing it in my mind. What forbearance is to me is having the wisdom not to speak or act from it, and to allow the thinking to pass as soon as possible, but to never live from my ego. Now, that doesn't mean I don't occasionally slip, but it's like I always say, you don't make a goal to most of the time not live from your ego, right? You make the goal to never live from your ego. And then when you slip, you forgive yourself and you recommit, right? That's forbearance, in my humble opinion. To F, honesty, my dictionary defines honesty as the quality of being honest, with honest defined as free of deceit and untruthfulness. I realize honesty cannot be accomplished through the ego mind. Whatever one perceives through the ego mind is untrue. And that's true. You know, I just told you about those four ladies that have something, had a conflict this week, and they all have a different story. It's clear that everything is perceived through the ego is untrue. In fact, what I told Jacqueline was, don't believe any of them. Not because they're liars, because their perception is limited, right? Don't think this person has the true story, right? They each are coming from this, they're each coming from that ego, and that ego is not, it's not true. So whatever one perceives through the ego mind is untrue. One may think she is being honest when she shares honestly what she thinks or perceives, but if it was thought or perceived with ego, it is naturally deceiving and therefore not honest. The only way to be honest is to abandon the ego entirely. One must see and think with the heart instead. Therefore, honesty is living from intuition and presence instead of from the personal thinking mind. Calm. Interestingly, my dictionary defines calm as the absence of violence, nervousness, anger, and similar emotions. My dictionary defines absence as non-existence. For me, this invites the inquiry, what is calm? Not what is calm as in how is calm defined. What is calm as in, is the mind calm or is awareness calm? In order to be calm, I must abide as that which is calm, as that where violence, nervousness, anger, and similar emotions are totally non-existent. Abiding as that is calm. So ultimately I defined calm as abiding as awareness. Restraint. My dictionary defines restraint as a type of prevention. For example, you may restrain or prevent yourself from shouting by making a decision not to shout. You may restrain a child in a car seat in hopes of preventing injury. In the context of this quote, what is there to prevent? The quote says, if you really have a desire for liberation, avoid the senses from a great distance, as you would poison. What is to be prevented? Seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling? No. As long as there is a human experience, these things cannot be prevented. So what is the wisdom of this quote? The answer that is continually comes to me is this: going out. Attention that is outward focused, absorbed in, completely lost. Habitual going out is to be prevented. How does one prevent habitual going out? One meditates, watching awareness as much as possible. One tunes into intuition instead of mind. One looks frequently at awareness during the day, many, many short glimpses. These, of course, are my games. One makes awareness her primary interest through her desire for awakening, through her curiosity about the self, and through her love of eternal truth. And that was the last one. So thank you, Tony, for asking me to share those. And again, you have no homework this week. A week from Wednesday, the homework will start again. No group next week. And I, like I said, one thing you could do is enjoy going back and reading some past entries in your own journal. I know that I'm really enjoying going through mine again, so you might also. So you guys have a great 2 weeks, Tony and Andy. I'll see you next week. All right? They're coming here. All right. Bye, everybody.